Here's number five. Where is the person's attention focused? Are they a person who focuses on other people? Or is their primary focus on how things affect themselves? Or is their primary focus based on data? Everything's about data and information and so forth. It's a pretty important distinction to make. And it's not one you make by asking questions. Let me make it more clear. Every one of us in life sorts by self. What I mean by sort is we pay attention to how things are going to affect us. We all do that. But some people, that is their single primary focus. They don't give a darn about how something's going to affect other people. All that matters is how's it going to affect me. And it's pretty important that you know who that person is. Because if you go to somebody whose primary focus is how it's going to affect them and not other people, and you want to sell them, let's say, a life insurance policy, and you're trying to sell them on the benefits that it would have because you know they want to take care of their family, even though they may have strong family values, that is not a major focus for them, and it's not going to be leveraged to get them to buy. You're trying to sell them your beliefs and your needs instead of theirs. Make sense? The same thing is true as if you're selling to a corporation. You're talking about, God, if your corporation would do this, think of the teamwork. A person who sorts by self does not care a whole lot about that. An other sorting person, you can have an extreme other sorting person who just focuses on the effect of other people and forgets themselves, and that's called a martyr. But an average other sorting person is someone who's a little more balanced. That is, what they do is they look at certainly how it's going to affect them, but equally important is, if I make this decision, how will it affect other people that I care about as well? And so you appeal to them in terms of selling quite differently than a self-sorter. You would talk to them about, hey, think of what a difference this will make for you and your family. What a difference this will make for your entire community, for your entire company. And that really taps the motivational needs of this person because they're an other sorting person. Some people don't care about themselves or others. All that matters is details and data because their world is focused on this idea of logic. It's still an emotional base, but logic is the belief system that they have, and all they want to know is what are the details, how does it work, all those kinds of things. And it's important for you to notice where their focus is, otherwise you're going to be selling to a person who's not there. It's critical to notice where they are. I can give you a couple of hints in body language. A person who sorts by others tends to do what I'm doing right now, which is I'm talking right now to you, but I'm not back on my heels like this. I'm forward. And the reason I'm forward is I'm into my conversation with you. I'm associated to you. If someone is talking to me, I'm not off looking over here. If someone's sharing something with me and I'm not 100% interested, for me, I still need to look and nod and at least appear interested and try and make myself interested because I care about how that person feels. Somebody who's a self-sorter will go inside and they don't give a darn about how you feel. Maybe if you're a real good friend, but otherwise, if you're an average person, well, they'll go off in their world, wait till you're done and come back. So you can tell by the way they use their body, by the way they put their potential focus. I'll give you a classic example. In business, there was Southwest Airlines did a study at one point, and they found out that 95% of all of their complaints were about 5% of their employees. That's a pretty important distinction. Now, what one person said, let's just fire them and start fresh. But there was a smart man in the organization, and he said, wait, before we fire them, let's find out what is it about their personalities that make them so obnoxious that we get so many complaints about them compared to anybody else. And by doing research, they found that these people's primary focus was not on the customer, but on who? Themselves. And they get upset that people wanted something from them when they were supposed to be in a service business. That's why there were complaints. So they did fire these people. But here's what's interesting. When they held new interviews, they decided what kind of people do they want in a service business, clearly. They wanted people sorted by others. So they ran these group interviews where they have people stand up and give a lecture as to why they wanted to come to work for Southwest Airlines. Now, most of these people thought that they were being judged by the quality of their presentation, but that is not who was being judged. The person standing up lecturing or sharing why they wanted to join was not even being paid attention to by the judges. They were watching the audience to see which of these people were real supportive of their competition. Which of these people were supporting others by like sitting forward in their chair and nodding and really being involved? And the people are back off in their own little world, thinking about what they're going to say, or going off like this, or going, oh God, putting their eyes up. As soon as they saw that, whap, they cut them from the list. What's interesting is they have now had the lowest complaint ratio in their history. They dropped the figures. I've forgotten the exact figures, but quite honestly, but I think it was something like 75 or 80% by making this one distinction. Now, does that mean sorting by others is the only way to live? No, there are places where you got to sort by self. Otherwise, you become a martyr, and that's not your goal either. I hope it's not your goal anyway. I can't say what your goals are. But I think a balance is what's useful. And there are places where, like if your accountant's going in to meet with the IRS, it'd probably be useful to have him sorting by self, meaning sorting for you and not by others. It'd probably be good to have an accountant who has an internal frame of reference. Otherwise, the IRS says, well, I don't think we agree with you. You go, okay. You need somebody who will sort by your interests and somebody who has got a strong internal frame of reference if they're going to meet with the IRS, and somebody who is not fearful of moving away from things but moves towards resolution. Somebody who does things because it's possible, not just because it's necessary. These are my criteria anyway. Let me give you three more real fast. Three more. Number one, or number whatever number I'm on now, I guess about seven, I'd say is this. Six. Thank you very much. Six would be this. Whether or not a person is completion-oriented or process-oriented, this is real important. Some people in life are, for them, life is a process and they just love it. And if they don't get things completed in a certain amount of time, they're okay about it. And because after all, they're enjoying the process. And by the way, some of these people seem to be the most well-adjusted people in terms of their level of enjoyment. There's another type of person which is very judgmental. Judgmental not meaning negative judgmental, but they're judging all the time. They're judgers, and they're judging whether or not they've completed things. It's on their mind a lot. They want to do things and complete them, and it's almost a compulsion. It's good to know this about people, because if you're going to motivate them, you need to know that some people you motivate will never get the job done, or they'll get the job done eventually because they kind of enjoy the process. Other people, if you want it done fast, you better get a judger in there. But how does this affect buying? Well, a judger needs completion so powerfully that if you can just start filling out an application, they almost have to complete it. It's absolutely amazing. It's like the word because. Remember when we talked about that? Where it's like they go onto automatic pilot. So if you've got an order blank close, if you know what I mean by that, where you've qualified the person, you've presented your product, you know they want it, you don't ask, do you want to go ahead? You pull out the order blank and you say, okay, so your address is 1108 East Walnut and you live in Glendora and your phone number is what? And they go, 963-1430, and you go, great. They go, wait a second, I didn't say I was buying. And you say, well, you did want this and this and this and this, didn't you? Well, yeah, okay. Then your office number is, and you start doing less. And what happens is they actually get caught up, and they have to let you complete. They literally let their completion strategy force them into the sale. Process people may have you come out three or four times to talk to them before they get convinced, because they love the process of buying. So you might want to be aware of which one they are. And the way to do that is real simple. Ask them some questions. Say, I'm curious in life, what do you enjoy most, getting things done? Or do you enjoy, like, you know, being involved in the process? Ask them some questions like that, and you'll get some hints right away. Number seven. Here's a very, very powerful and important distinction. How a person gets convinced. In other words, what has to happen for this person to believe that something is true? This may be the most important distinction I'm going to give you out of these 10. We call it the person's convincer strategy. What does it take to convince someone? And this, if we think about the initial thing we talked about in terms of probing for problems, this is really understanding their buying pattern. There are two things that make somebody want to buy. The first thing that has to happen for somebody to believe that something is true, for them to get convinced, is they have to have some kind of input that starts to make them feel certain that they're going to get what they want. And what's interesting is, you and I have five senses. But for most of us, we take input between one or another as being stronger or more important. So some people get convinced by seeing. The old phrase, seeing is believing, that's not true for all people. But for some people, the primary thing that they have to experience to be convinced something is true, they got to see it. Some people are more auditorily oriented. You can show them all day long, but they need to hear from other people. They need to have some conversations about it. And if they hear enough, then they get convinced. Some people, what they got to do is have a kinesthetic experience or do it. They have to do something, utilize the product or service in order for that person to feel like something is really true. They got to actually do something with it or experience it kinesthetically. And some people are more digital, or they have to read it. They have to get all kinds of information, read up the details, have it in writing, and then they become convinced. Now, that's the first distinction. What kind of input do you need? And by the way, everyone's different. So you know what most of us do again? We try and convince people the way we get convinced. And so, for example, I get convinced by things by seeing them and by hearing them. If I see and hear, I don't have to read about it. I don't have to do it. If I see and read it, or excuse me, if I see or hear it, I pretty much start to get convinced. That's the kind of input I need. Now, other people are different. Thinking you can tell them all day, you can show them, but unless they see it in print, forget it. How many have dealt with this kind of person so you know what I'm talking about? So the way you find this out is you ask a person a simple question that I hope you'll remember from now on, because out of the 10 distinctions I've given you, I keep saying one is the most important, but they're all so important. But I'd say this is probably one of the most, because it'll tell you how to finally present your product in a way that that person traditionally perceives it in order to feel certain they should buy. And the question you ask that person is, how do you know when somebody's really good at what they do? How do you know when a fellow worker, for example, is really good at what they do? Now, some people, and then you ask them, do you need to see them do it? Do you need to hear from other people how good they are? Do you need to have to work with them and do something with them? Or do you just need to read about their performance? Now, think about your answer to that. What has to happen for you to really believe a coworker is really good at what they do? Do you have to see them do it, hear about their performance, do it with them, or read about it? But the bottom line is, what we've got here is you find out. Now, for some people, they need to have two of them. They need to see it and hear it. So how are you going to present to that person when you sell your product? Are you going to show them a bunch of writing? Are you going to demonstrate the product over and over again to them? No. That may work for somebody else, but you're wasting your time with this person. You want to present in their strategy. Present things the way they buy. Hey, listen, if you lose your keys, don't you have a pattern for going back and looking for them? How many of you got a place? You look, the first place you go look, and then there's a second place, and there's a third place. How many got a pattern like that within yourself? You have the same patterns for buying, even if you're not aware of them. Here's the second aspect of the convincer strategy. The first one is, what's the evidence you need? You need visual evidence, auditory evidence, feeling evidence, or reading evidence, digital evidence. The second thing is the amount of time. Meaning, do you, in order to be convinced, let's say you have to see it and hear it. How often do you have to see it and hear it before you get convinced? Because it's not most people. They don't just see it and hear it once and become convinced. Some people need it to happen two or three times. Some people need to see and hear something for 6 months and then they believe. Some people need to see it and hear it every single time to believe it's there. So there are four possibilities about the way you have to have time connected with your evidence to become convinced of something. And those four possibilities are, some people are what we call automatic convincers. Automatic convincers are people that once you meet their evidence procedure, you show them or tell them or whatever it is, all you got to do is that one time and they're on automatic pilot. They now believe you. So that's called an automatic. Some people need to have it happen a certain number of times. We call them number of times people. For some of those people, let's say it's two or three times. They need to see something or hear something or read it before they're convinced. Some people are what we call period of time people. Period of time means that maybe they go for 6 months of seeing and hearing and now they believe it. And then, of course, the fourth one is people that are what we call consistent. And those people never believe. The only way to believe that something is true is if you can show them again today. If they saw it yesterday, that's not enough. They got to see it today to believe that it's true. These are, again, a salesman's nightmare. Now, the question you ask here is very simple. A classic example would be, how do you know when a coworker is really good at what they do? And they tell you. You say, that's great. And then your response is, great, do you have to see it? Do you have to hear about their performance? Do you have to do it with them or read it? They tell you. How often do you have to see them, hear them, or have them do that with you before you come convinced? Just one time and you know? Or is it two or three times? Or is it like 2 or 3 months or 6 months? Or is it every time they have to do it for you to know that they're good? This is a darn important distinction, because people who are automatic are the easiest people to sell, aren't they? You go in there, let's say you demonstrate your product, they see it works, and whammo, they're ready to buy now. How many have gotten to deal with these people and enjoyed it? They're our favorite for salespeople. Second kind of person, you see here or do it for them, and you know they need to see it a few times. You got to keep prompting them to buy, don't you? And they're probably your second favorite. You know, they give you a no or two, but you keep at it and they buy. Third one that people don't like so often are people you got to keep going after. Maybe you got to work on them for 2 or 3 sessions. You got to call them back. You got to follow up. You got to push, push, push. But eventually they buy, because for them, they need to go through a period of time. And the most difficult one of all is the consistent person. That's the kind of person that maybe you have as a client, and you've had them as a client for maybe 3 or 4 or 5 years. And every month you come in to give them more of your product, and every month they go, tell me why I should still use this stuff. And you go, what do you mean, John? You've been doing this for 4 years. And every month I come in, you say, why should I use this stuff? And he says, yeah, show me why now. And the same thing, by the way, happens in relationships. Think about it. Some people become convinced that you love them by a one-time experience. You say, I love you, and they need to hear it. And you said it one time, wapola, they know it's there. Some people need to happen to have something happen a number of times. So maybe you've been with them, and let's say they need to hear it, and you say, I love you, on five different occasions, and all of a sudden one day, wow, now they feel certain you love them. Some people need a period of time. You love them totally, but all of a sudden one day, 12 months later, they go, you really do love me, don't you? And you go, what? Of course I love you. Yeah, but now I know. What do you mean, now you know? I've been with you a year. That's right, because you've been here a year, now I know. How many know that have had these kinds of relationships with people or can see your own strategy? And some people are what we call consistent lovers, meaning they'll come in and go, you don't love me. You go, yes, I do. And they go, prove it. You haven't done anything with me today. And they're the kind of person all the time you got to be reassuring them. How many have had a relationship with somebody like this in your lifetime? So I used to get upset with people who had a consistency strategy because my strategy used to be automatic. Now it's a number of times and in some situations a period of time. No one is right. In fact, being on automatic or having a couple of times to be convinced can be dangerous. It got me in a lot of trouble where I believed people who weren't telling me the truth sometimes just because I saw the good side of them a couple of times. And then I just decided they're a good person and never looked again. So there's danger in all these things. But when you find somebody who's a convincer, instead of being upset or a consistent person, you just know that every month you go to see them, you're going to need to convince them again. And you just know that. And you just know that's how they are. And you don't get upset about it anymore. It's giving you a way to understand how people buy.